This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire state senators dig into the budget this week, and in a kind of spring cleaning exercise, they'll decide what items from the House's version they might like to keep and what they might end up throwing out. Here's Senate Finance Committee Chair Jeannie Forrester.
The House did some good things, and there are some things in their budget that we will make different choices.
House lawmakers passed their $11 billion budget last week. It's a partisan plan approved with strong majority Republican support and over the objections of minority Democrats. The House plan increases overall state spending from current levels, but not by as much as Governor Hassan's proposal, about $300 million less. Today in The Exchange, we examine what the House did, including some of the claims and counterclaims heard about it last week, and we'll speculate a little on what the Senate might do. Let's hear from you two. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. Neil Kirk is here, Republican representative from Ware, chair of the House Finance Committee. And Representative Kirk, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure, Laura.
Also with us, Mary Jane Wallner, Democratic representative from Concord, ranking Democrat on the House Finance Committee. And Representative Wallner, good to see you, too. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And also with us, Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies and a longtime analyst of the state's budgeting process. And Steve, thanks for taking time out.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and Steve, I did want to start with you. We've heard a lot about this $11.2 billion budget. And you think, wow, this is a small state. That's a lot of money. Where does that money come from?
Well, it comes from a variety of different sources. We have a set of taxes, business profits tax, the business enterprise tax. We have federal funds that we draw down for programs, and those really account for the lion's share of where we get our resources. We have a whole series of other taxes on a variety of things like beer and so that's really where the money comes from.
Because people hear $11 billion and they think, well, wait, New Hampshire doesn't have a broad-based sales tax, doesn't have a broad-based income tax. So a lot of the money is federal, Steve.
It is federal. About half of the money, generally speaking, comes from sources that are not state-specific taxes.
Here's another important point that I want to ask you about, Steve, before we get to our representatives. We've heard a lot over the past couple of weeks about cuts, with Democrats especially calling the House budget draconian and irresponsible because of the cuts. Define a cut, Steve, and can the word cut have more than one meaning?
It can indeed, and that's the perennial question that we have about budgeting. The agencies themselves create something called the maintenance budget, which is the budget they think represents a budget without a cut, so what they have to do with their current activities. That's generally put aside in the budgeting process, and the cut that we all think about is what happens relative to the governor's budget. So the governor puts a budget out there, and if the House makes a change, reduces it or increases it, then that's considered a cut or an increase. If you are doing a business plan, you would look at what you're doing right now, and you'd account for the number of people that you're going to see increasing or the changes in inflationary costs, and you budget that way. That's not really the way we go about the budget here.
So just to make it super simple, let's say the governor in her budget allots $5 for transportation. And obviously this is just an example. And the House decides to allot, you know, $2.50 for transportation. It's not as much as what the governor allotted, but it's still more than where they're at now. But some people would call that a cut.
Right. And in fact, if you listen to the rhetoric around the budget, the media and others are suggesting that there were significant reductions off of the governor's budget and there were significant cuts. And there were, but there's still roughly half the historical increase that we've seen is occurring in this House budget. So it's not a decrease relative to what we're currently spending.
Well, and Representative Kirk, as Steve said, this budget does represent an increase from current spending by about $300 million. How come?
There are two different ways of budgeting, Laura. The governor chose one way. The House chose another way. The governor looked at the state's needs as she saw them and then figured out a way to pay for them. So she raised taxes by $95 million. She had revenue estimates from the revenues that we currently have, and saw them to be $100 million more than the House did. And so she had about almost $200 million more to spend because she wanted to do more. The House that was elected and that passed this budget, I think, reflects the views of the voters in that they didn't want larger government. And so our budget is more of a traditional family type budget. We look at what resources we have and then how we can best allocate them. So those are two very different approaches to budgeting. And the one that the House chose allowed us to spend more money than we currently are because revenues were coming in higher. But there are no new taxes. There are just minor increases in fees. And some of the things that the governor did to pay for her additional spending, the voters didn't want, and the House budget reflects that. This budget is an increase over current levels of spending. We're currently spending about $10.8 billion, and this budget goes up to $11.2 billion. The governor wanted to go up to $11.6 billion, and she had to find the extra $400 million somewhere. And she did that, as I suggested, plus matching federal funds.
You know, Mary Jane Wollner, looking at the numbers that Representative Kirk just laid out, so we're currently spending $10.8 billion. The House did $11.2 billion. Governor Hassan did $11.6 billion. It doesn't seem like that big of a difference to merit words such as, you know, draconian and reckless and irresponsible.
Well, I think what the governor had done was she had really looked at what are some of the issues facing New Hampshire. And because she has the advantage of getting started early, she has a long time with the budget. She also has all the department heads and the commissioners. They really take a very deep look at what's going on in New Hampshire and what some of the needs are. And they look at what maintenance budget is. If there was a service that was provided 2 years ago, and we actually do a two-year budget, so it makes budgeting a little bit more difficult when you're looking out 2 years instead of just one. So she really had the advantage of taking a really close look at what a maintenance budget would be and what do we need to maintain the services that we're presently providing to our citizens.
You've called this budget, Representative Wollner, tremendously disappointing. How come?
I just found it to be very disappointing, particularly even some of the process. We didn't really dig deep into the budget. I'm on one of the divisions on the Finance Committee, and we didn't really take the time to really dig into the budget to find out why the governor had proposed the budget she did. And I felt very disappointed that we didn't really proceed that way.
Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're looking back at the House budget that was passed last week. A little bit later on, we'll talk about what the Senate might do with this budget. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. You know, Representative Kirk, you had something interesting to say after the budget, too. You know, obviously pleased with how it came out, but you called it sort of a, I can't remember the exact words, but it was like business as usual, not sort of the big, expansive rethink that you feel New Hampshire needs. Give us a little more there.
When we first started the budget process, I recognized that the state faces some very significant long-range problems. For example, the graying of our population, what Mr. Norton has called the silver tsunami. The fact that the young people that we have are not an increasing proportion of our population. And I had hopes that the state budget might be able to make some inroads in dealing with that. And I had some ideas about doing it. But as part of the budget process, those ideas fell by the wayside as we had to concentrate too much on our current needs and didn't have either the resources or the time to look at future needs. So in that sense, I was disappointed. But
what
perhaps I had
like?
Higher aspirations than were reasonable in terms of budgeting.
Well, what do those inroads look like? I'm curious. And I want to hear from Representative Wallner, too. Okay, so if you're looking sort of big picture and what can we do about this demographic challenge, and Steve, I definitely want you to jump in here, too. What do some of those efforts look like, you know, if you had your way and you could make it perfect?
First, folks need to understand that the budget is one thing and many policy bills go separately from the budget. And so to some extent, my comments really could be taken as a need to address these policy issues outside of the budget. For example, how do we get talented, well-educated younger people to stay in New Hampshire to form a labor pool that will be attractive to businesses? I had an idea and I put forth a bill that went to the Education Committee that would provide scholarships at the university system for students who were interested in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, the STEM subjects. And the kicker there was that if these students got the scholarship, they would have to work in New Hampshire for 5 years afterward. That, to me, is the kind of policy which attempts to address this need. It's a small step, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
And that could not be part of the budget.
What about the gas tax that you promoted? Was that part of this sort of broader economic development forward thinking?
No. That was to deal with a very immediate need. Would you like to discuss that now? Or?
Actually, I want to ask Steve Norton about this idea, too, what Chairman Kirk said about the budget is, you know, it's fine in his opinion. It's you know, day to day. It's what you'd expect. But it's not the big sort of rethink that New Hampshire needs.
Yeah. I think if I look off into the future and you think about where people are moving and where the economy has gone internationally and nationally, there are maybe five things that I think New Hampshire needs to think about, and partially through the budget, because that's the primary policy statement for the state, but also through other policy initiatives. One is vibrant cities are increasingly important to human capital development. And so what are the things that we can do as a state to encourage vibrant cities, as well as keeping focus on our more rural parts of the state. Education, human capital is so critical. So how are we managing our K through 12 policies as well as our higher ed policies? They're equally important when you think about maintaining a talent pool or keeping a talent, bringing a set of talents here. We have a set of cost issues in this state that we need to manage and think about carefully. One, our housing costs remain high relative to other parts of the country. We have an energy cost issue. Manufacturers and others who might otherwise be here can't because the costs of energy are so high. Healthcare is also a high cost in New Hampshire. So we have some cost issues. And then the infrastructure issues that we've talked about, bridges, roads, and the like. So five really important issues that we need to grapple with.
Okay. And Representative Wallner, I'll get your thoughts, too, in just a moment. And we'll hear from you. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're diving into the House budget, and let's hear from you, your questions and comments about what the House did last week, what you hope the Senate now does with the state budget, are welcome at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. By the way, you can visit nhpr.org to see a graph that illustrates the spending differences between the House budget, the governor's budget, and current spending levels. Again, that's at nhpr.org if you want more detail. You can give us a call, too. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, before we get into some of the detail of this budget, I did want to ask you, too, Representative Mary Jane Wallner. We talked about, you know, the sort of the budget doing what it needs to do year by year. But then this bigger picture that Neil Kirk and Steve Norton raised, the idea that, you know, if you're looking long-term at economic development, New Hampshire's demographic challenges, this budget doesn't really address that. And I wonder what you think.
Right. Well, I think that's one reason I was sort of disappointed in the budget was because in January, when we went back to the Finance Committee, we had a number of economists, and actually Steve Norton came in and talked to us, as well as a number of other economists. And they talked about what do we need to do to move the state forward and how do we bring businesses here. How do we get more jobs? And one of the things we heard over and over and over from each of the people who came to talk to us was we need a well-educated workforce. And I think it's interesting that one of the very first choices made in this budget was to reduce the appropriations for the University of New Hampshire, the university system of New Hampshire, and also the community colleges.
Now, is that
and
a reduction,
a reduction from the governor's budget?
The governor's budget, yeah.
See, I think that the governor had that same kind of information. She was looking forward. She was saying, what do we need? We need a well-educated young workforce to get people to come here and start businesses. And so she had added to her to the base budget. She had added money for the university system and for the community colleges. The other thing, I think some of the other things that were interesting that Steve just talked about were we need energy. We need to talk about energy. And one of the things this budget does is it goes into and takes a dedicated fund for renewable energy. And actually at the tune of $52 million, it empties that fund for the next 2 years.
Can you address that to Representative Kirk, the education cuts especially, given that everybody says we need a well-educated workforce? And then we'll go to our listeners.
Once again, they were not cuts. The university system is funded at the same level, $153 million over the biennium that it's currently getting. And the community college system has a small increase of $1.5 million for the proposed biennium compared to current spending. So there were no reductions. On the other hand, all of us would have liked to have put more money into that because obviously higher tuitions, and we have some of the highest in the nation, are not very attractive for our students. The students that go to the university system tend to stay in New Hampshire more so than our New Hampshire students who go outside of the state. So that would have been something that we would have liked to do. But given the financial constraints, we were unable to do that.
I want to ask you real quick about that, too, and then I can see you want to jump in, Steve Norton. Given the financial constraints, Governor Hassan said, while you folks were crafting this budget, she said, look, we're not in a recession anymore. Why are we budgeting like we are?
Governor Hassan believes that government has a much larger role to play in society than the people of this state, at least those who elected House members, because we all campaigned on a promise to live within our means and to impose no new or increased taxes. This budget reflects that promise to the people, and as far as I'm concerned, we've kept our word. That does put constraints on us that the governor did not have.
Steve, go ahead and jump in, and then our calls, emails, Facebook comments, and so forth.
It is worth noting that this was the first post-recession budget. Revenues are anticipated to grow in both the House and the governor's budget.
People are being cautious.
But there are also some other constraints which really serve as the foundation of this budget. One was that we had negotiated a deal with the hospitals for the Medicaid enhancement tax, which takes up $100 million of revenues which might otherwise have gone to the university. And we also had a mental health settlement that had to be funded in some way. So that really constrained the decisions that the governor could make and also the House.
I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, for the average listener, they think roads and bridges, they think the university system. We forget, right, Steve, that there are these other settlements that the state reached that do take up a big chunk of it.
Yeah, that's true. And also, you know, natural growth in health and human services as a result of some federal changes. You know, HHS in the 2017 House proposal is about $2.1 billion, and that's, you know, more than a third of the state budget.
I definitely want to ask you all more detail on health and human services in just a moment. But let's go to our listeners. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Let's go to Kathleen in Grafton first. Hi, Kathleen. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. I just want to say that I don't usually call into these things, but I just can't help myself this time because I have a chance to talk to some legislators that I never get. And my son is autistic. We're trying to keep him at home. We have decimated our savings. We're part of the gray tsunami that's coming on. We don't know what's going to happen. We live day to day. He has very grave needs. And, you know, it's very disappointing to us, you know, that the Department of Health and Human Services is being cut by $52 million and that Amendment 1168 did not pass to restore the funding. And I very much agree with Governor Hassan that that department needs to be totally funded. It wasn't funded correctly in the first place. And they wouldn't have had a mental health settlement if they had had proper proper funding in place to help those people, and we wouldn't have the situation we had at Lakeview. My son spent 3 months there, by the way, and lost 30 pounds while he was there at the recommendation of our school district. And, you know, I knew every day I had to get him out of there, and thank God I did.
Well, and Kathleen, thank you for calling in. So let's talk about the Health and Human Services budget. And Steve Norton, I'll start with you, but want to hear from everybody. You've often reminded everyone that this is the biggest part of the budget. What happens to this agency overall under this House budget, Steve?
There are some things that were funded. Well, let's start with the governor's budget. Number one, the governor included an expansion, the Medicaid expansion, in her budget, which wasn't included under current law, and the House did not include that in current law.
And we should definitely talk about that.
Yep. The budget the governor put together included an expansion in the benefit for substance abuse under the Medicaid program, and that was also not included within the House. But taking away those changes relative to the governor's budget, it was over the biennium about a 10% increase for HHS. Digging down into that is very difficult right now because there were structural changes in the budget, which we're still trying to figure out. But a big chunk of that increase was associated with the MET settlement and the mental health settlement. So there definitely was an increase. Understanding what was a cut and what isn't a cut is still hard. And I think we're going to have to work over the next few months with the Senate, with Health and Human Services, to more clearly define them.
Yeah.
To give you a sense, within the developmental services budget, which the caller from Grafton just mentioned, there was an increase from the actual spending in 2014 of about 8% over the biennium. But that was a decrease relative to what the governor wanted to include in her budget to fully fund all the services that vulnerable population wanted.
We keep getting back to that, too. Slight increases from current spending levels, but not as much as what the governor called for. I can see both of you want to jump in. Go ahead, Representative Kirk, you first, and then Representative Wallner, please.
The Health and Human Services budget was increased by $78 million in general funds and about $141 million in federal funds. So the budget is larger compared to what we are now spending. And indeed, with respect to developmental disabilities, the level of funding is slightly up. But there are more people needing developmental disability services in the future than there are currently. And so one can argue that those are not taken care of. But we did make an important improvement, I think, in the budget by eliminating the so-called waiting list for developmental disability services, combining that together with the existing population so there is no longer a waiting list, and then allowing the department to allocate based on need what funds are available. I think that will improve services to people. Obviously, many people are very concerned that they will have fewer services as a result of this, but I think it's not possible to predict whether or not that will happen. The problem with Health and Human Services was, as Steve has mentioned, we had about $123 million of additional expenses that we had to cover. The mental health settlement, the settlement with the hospitals, and the effect of Obamacare, which increased the number of people who were eligible for traditional Medicaid. Those three together cost an additional $123 million in general funds.
Never mind Medicaid expansion.
This has nothing to do with Medicaid expansion before you consider that. And so we had to make arrangements to pay for those, which obviously put a constraint on what we could do for the rest of the Health and Human Services budget. But again, overall, spending is increased on Health and Human Services.
Well, Kathleen, good luck with your son. And I have a different question for you on Health and Human Services, Mary Jane Wallner. Is there an argument that as the economy improves, I think New Hampshire's unemployment rate is 4.2 or 3 or 4%. It's pretty low. That, you know, Health and Human Services shouldn't need as much money as it did in the depths of the recession.
Well, I do think that that's true when it comes to things like TANF, aid for families.
Welfare.
Well, what used to be considered welfare. I think that that number is going down, and that we saw evidence that those numbers have decreased. I think in the area of something like developmental disabilities, though, we're seeing that there are more people who need those services. I think it's good to go back a little bit and think about how we got to a community model for developmental services. We had been running a large institution for many, many years, Laconia State School, and there was a lawsuit. And because of that lawsuit, we closed that institution and have now a developmental disabilities system that takes place in the community. It is probably, if we did a comparison to what it would cost us to run an institution today for all of those families, running a community-based system where families are involved, families take care of their family members, and we just supplement with a few services, I think we have a lot less expensive service. I hate to see this budget take us back to where we will face lawsuits again, like we did in the mental health system. We did face a mental health lawsuit and had to fund that. As Neil said, we had to fund that. Was one of the first things we had to fund. Seems like sometimes our budgeting now is we first fund the lawsuits, and then we try to fit everything else in with what's left over.
So are you suggesting, Representative Wollner, that if New Hampshire continues to underfund, as you see it, mm-hmm. the developmental disabilities system, that we might be ripe for yet another lawsuit?
I don't know that. I haven't spoken to anyone in the developmental disabilities community about that. But it seems like that's how we got ourselves to that position with the mental health lawsuit that we had to deal with. And as Neil said, that was the first thing we had to fund. The hospital sued us because we were not using the Medicaid tax correctly. So
that's the Medicaid Enhancement Tax lawsuit.
So I think that we, through our budgeting, and we try to be so stingy with our budgeting that then what happens is we underfund areas, and then we end up in a lawsuit. And the next budget, we have to take care of that, those lawsuits first.
Wow. That's a whole interesting topic that I won't get into now. But let's go back to our listeners. Again, thank you for that call. Let's go next to Bristol, where Mary is on the line. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Well, if you had an income tax, you'd get some of the money back that you paid lawyers. If you had an income tax, you wouldn't charge me more than I pay the federal government for my interest and dividends tax, which is nothing but an income tax on old people that have saved their money. If you had somebody in the Department of Revenue Administration go to HomeAway.com and notify all the people who have rental property in New Hampshire who've never heard of the rooms and meals tax that they have to collect 9%, you'd get more money. That is my comment.
Okay.
Those are my comments.
Mary,
God bless you.
Thank you very much for calling in. And Steve Norton, this is a long argument in New Hampshire, the lack of an income tax. But I don't think that that's going to happen anytime soon.
No, and I think that the basic fundamental question or issue is that there's still, I think, concern about whether or not the state wants to increase taxes or not. And that's the split that's occurred in the House for many years. We as a state do not have trouble raising revenue when we want to or required to. We had to under the Claremont lawsuit. We came up with an additional $400 million. Governor Lynch came up with additional resources. The governor did as well. The question, I think, is not that we don't have the ability to raise money. It's just there isn't the will to do so.
Well, that is a perfect segue into another question I had for especially you House members, and that has to do with gambling. And Representative Kirk, as you know, the Senate has long approved gambling measures. There's a two-casino bill before one of the House committees this week. What are your thoughts, expectations, hopes there?
Personally, I oppose casino gambling, not for moral reasons, but because I think the revenue that would result from that would create extraordinary problems for the state. It's unpredictable, and in other states it's declining. And I can just see us using that revenue at some point in the future to institute and pay for new programs and then struggle to keep those programs in effect as the revenue declines. Poor Atlantic City has lost 3 or 4 of its casinos, and they're now spending money to try to train 6,000 people who have lost their jobs. This is a very competitive market for casinos, so I don't think it's a good move for New Hampshire from a revenue point of view. I'd also point out, and I think the Senate has confirmed this, that even if that bill were to pass, the revenue from that bill would not be available for us to spend in the current budget. So it really is irrelevant to the discussion of the budget for 16-17.
And
it would have an impact, of course, in 18-19 and beyond.
When you say this is a competitive market, you're talking about New England, right, with Maine and Massachusetts and so forth.
Look at what's happening in Connecticut, Foxwoods, Mohegan Sun. not generating as much revenue as they thought. Connecticut is thinking about expanding the number of casinos as new casinos are coming online in Massachusetts. The Rhode Island casino is in deep financial trouble. So if you want to get money without taxation, there are many ways to do it, but the least efficient and effective way is casinos. Lots of glitz, but no dollars that are reliable.
What do you think, Representative Wallner? Lots of glitz, but no dollars?
This is one place where Neil and I completely agree with each other.
Wow, okay.
I think he just said it all.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. And let's go next to Nashua. Latha is on the air. Hi, Latha. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, Representative Firth and Representative Wallner. My question to you, Representative Firth, is second largest city in the state. Nashua tends to lose big time. Our Republican mayor begged our delegation to vote against this budget because not only Nashua did not ask for increased funding from state, but Nashua's losing what they were promised, like the gas tax increase from last time. And Nashua has the largest congregated meal program for Meals on Wheels. That is going to be cut. We have, you know, the second largest economic engine in the state. We have colleges. We have community colleges that is going to lose funding. CD population, that program is. How do I respond to my constituents who are asking me, you know, you voted for the budget, against the budget, but where are the dollars that we were supposed to get to keep this economic engine going?
Okay. Latha, thank you very much for calling in. And I guess she's a state rep. So Representative Kirk, she's asking, what should she say to her constituents in Nashua? Do you want to jump in real quickly there? We're heading into a break. So why don't we wait and I'll give you more of an opportunity to express yourself. I also have a question for you too, Steve Norton, because Latha's comment relates to this city economic development that you mentioned earlier. So Latha, hang on. We will discuss your question after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about the House budget that was passed last week and what the Senate might do with this budget. We're finding out some of the details of what was and was not included in the budget and what people mean when they talk about certain services being cut or not. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Our guests are Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, Mary Jane Wallner, Democratic Representative from Concord, Ranking Democrat on the House Finance Committee, and Neil Kirk, Republican Representative from Ware, Chair of the House Finance Committee. And Representative Kirk, to you, just before the break, we heard from Latha in Nashua, a state rep, who is upset about some of what she called cuts in this budget, developmental services, colleges, and so forth. Issues that she said will really affect her constituents in Nashua, and I want to give you an opportunity to respond there.
Thank you, Laura. I think the caller's question really presumed that the state had obligations that it had to fulfill, and even if raising additional revenue were required, that was the state's obligation. I take issue with that premise. But with respect to her particular issues, we discussed the developmental disability services, and they were level funded slightly, approximately level funded. With respect to K-12 education, we did reduce all of the grants that are called stabilization grants that the state has been paying since 2012 to hold districts harmless against the decline in student enrollments. But everyone understood that that was a temporary program, and now we've started to taper it off. And so folks, including Nashua, will get 90% of their grant, not 100% as they were last year. With respect to elderly services, it's true that we did reduce the non-Medicaid elderly services, including Meals on Wheels, although the Commissioner of the Health and Human Services Department has told us that he will give a priority to funding Meals on Wheels within his resources.
Yeah, that's gotten a lot of attention.
And we've gotten – we set up in the budget an authorization for him to transfer money around from all funds so that he is in a position to deal with the most immediate ones as he sees fit. With respect to revenue from the gas tax increase that was passed, I think, 2 years ago, the 4.2 cents – Nashua will get the same amount of money next 2 years as they have in the past. What they will not get is the increase, which they might have expected, but that will not be coming because that was necessary to fund the Department of Transportation.
The operating budget.
I and others had thought that increasing the gas tax would have been the better way to go, but the House was adamantly opposed to that. So the Finance Committee had to go back to the drawing boards, and as Representative Wallner has said, we looked at the energy fund and we said, well, let's take some of that, and we use that to make sure that the Transportation Department is funded for the next 2 years without a gas tax. But again, this is extemporizing. There is no question that for the past 6, 8, 10 years, we have not faced up to our responsibilities to adequately fund the Department of Transportation. We sold a bridge over over the Piscataqua River to the Turnpike Authority to get money to temporarily fund the Highway Department or the Department of Transportation, and that really is not a desirable thing to do.
Well,
we may be out of short-term expedience.
Yeah, I think there you and Governor Hassan have agreed. You both said there's no more tricks left in the bag when it comes to funding transportation. I just want to share a couple. Oh, go ahead, Representative Wallner.
Well, this was sort of the last trick they had in their bag was to take the completely empty the renewable energy fund. It was a dedicated fund, and to use the renewable energy fund to fund the Department of Transportation. That seems like that's probably the last trick there is.
Well, and we've got two Facebook comments actually that relate exactly to what both of you just said. John says, don't raid funds. The Renewable Energy Fund is not for transportation. He says this should be illegal. And then Wallace says, raise the gas tax 8 cents a gallon and return to all those other budgets the money raided needed to fill the DOT budget gap. So thanks for those comments on Facebook. Again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Another fund that was so-called raided, it's strong language, Steve Norton, was the Rainy Day Fund. Is there anything left?
No, there is nothing left, but there hasn't been much in there for quite a while. The money was used for a rainy day, the Great Recession, and the question that the House and the governor had to ask themselves is it time to build that rainy day fund up for the next rainy day, or are we still in that?
Is it always raining?
Is it raining? And the answer from both was it's raining still.
And the Senate, as I recall, has strong feelings about this, Steve. They do not like leaving the rainy day fund empty.
Yeah, but they're going to have to make some additional choices about how they're going to prioritize things in a world in which they, like the House, are not going to increase taxes.
All right, let's go back to our listeners, and I have a bunch more questions for you. And let's see, up next, Jonathan in Manchester. Go ahead, Jonathan, you're on the air.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
Well, I guess New Hampshire is going to continue to be a fiefdom into the 21st century.
A fiefdom?
And thinking backwards, no forward thought. I always hear, especially mentioned on the show, what a wealthy state New Hampshire is. What that really means is there's a small percentage of very wealthy people, and this is a big tax shelter. We have people moving up here for their secondary and tertiary homes so they can sit on money. They call them first homes, of course, once they move up here. And, you know, it's irresponsible of the GOP to only be thinking about old people sitting on their money and nothing invested in the state. As I've watched education plummet over the last 20 years, the quality of education in this state, and this raiding of other funds, and it's nickel and diming over things like the 2 cent gas tax or the 10 cent gas tax even for, and no future thinking for the cities down here. Nashua and Manchester are so in trouble, but we don't consider that part of the state. I know because I grew up in rural New Hampshire. I know how we speak about the cities.
Yeah. Jonathan, it's interesting to hear from you after that call we got from Nashua. So another shout out for some more assistance for some of the concerns of cities. Thank you for calling in, Jonathan. And let's go next to Patrick and Sharon. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have to disagree with that premise that education is the primary creator of jobs. It certainly is one component, but more than anything is a business environment that fosters a business wanting to start and continue operations on a day-to-day basis. Running a business is extremely difficult. And if you have government spending money that it doesn't have and having an irresponsible fiscal responsibility, burdensome regulations, any kind of hassle that makes a business not want to start in the first place, they're not going to move here. If you look at the states where businesses are growing now, states that have fiscally responsible practices and fewer burdensome regulations.
So from a business perspective, Patrick, this should be a good budget? Is that what you're saying?
I think it's a step in the right direction. You've brought up a lot of an interesting point that I see year after year, both at the state level and at the federal level. And I was a selectman of my town once. And often when people, particularly Democrats, see a budget not increasing, they call that a reduction. And I'm a computer scientist, and to call something a reduction that is not a reduction is just illogical to me. And I see that all the time. It's like there's never enough money for these things.
Patrick, thank you for calling in. Mary Jane Wallner, I'll throw that to you, a shout-out for a fiscally responsible budget from a business person who says that's going to help improve the economy too, not just the spending on education and so forth.
Well, I think that the governor really put out there a fiscally responsible budget. She looked at what the needs of the state are and what was going to move the state forward. She had a lot of information that she worked with. She felt that education did produce a good, well-educated workforce and that businesses were interested in a well-educated workforce. And we did hear that over and over and over, that that's what many businesses are looking for, is a workforce that is educated and ready to go to work. There's one other point that I wanted to speak to for just a minute, and that is one thing that we've learned from Steve over and over, is that New Hampshire is graying. And this budget reduces some of the various services that help people stay in their own home as they get older. It reduces it by 50%. Now, whether that is a cut. That is a 50% reduction in services.
From things current like, spending
from,
levels.
From the governor's proposed, but also from the current spending. Things like Meals on Wheels, things like a homemaker, elderly transportation. These are all services that are really fairly low-cost services that we can provide to elders in their own homes, or a congregate meal where they can go and have a meal with a group. These are services, and that is going to keep people from having to go into much higher cost services such as nursing homes. And nursing homes is one of the most expensive services we provide to citizens. So I think that this was one of those decisions that it may sound like it saves some money now, but I think in the long run, it is going to cost us a lot more.
Well, Patrick, thank you for the call. Jonathan, thank you also. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You know, picking up on what Patrick said, Representative Kirk, he talked about the business climate. The state Senate, definitely, Republicans anyway, want to lower business taxes. This House budget does not lower business taxes. How come?
Because the bills to do so originated in the Senate and have not yet come to the House, and therefore it would have been imprudent for the budget to step on the House Ways and Means Committee's prerogatives to deal with these taxes. If I may respond to what Representative Wallner said about services for the elderly, she may be right, but I'd point out that these services, unlike Medicaid services, are available to people without regard to income. These are not means-tested services. And so it's a little less difficult to cut those than it would be, for example, to eliminate optional services for Medicaid people, which at one time was on the table and we thought about doing, ultimately decided not to.
All right. And I have to ask you about Medicaid expansion in the
Sure.
few minutes that we have left. Steve Norton, this is a big difference between what the governor wanted and what the House decided to do.
That's correct.
Just remind us of what this is all about.
As part of the Affordable Care Act, states were ultimately given the option by the Supreme Court to expand its Medicaid program. And over the course of about 8 months of negotiations, the decision was made to expand Medicaid. The program was designed to sunset in January of 2016, and the governor's budget included an extension of that and some funding to cover the difference between what the state would be currently paying, which is nothing, to the amount the state would have to pick up under the declining federal participation.
Which it declines down to 90%.
That's correct. That's correct. So the House decided to strike that from the budget and allow current law to run its course, which means that the Medicaid expansion would end effective January 2016.
I'm feeling a little guilty asking you both about this in the waning minutes of this show, but it is such a big issue. Representative Kirk, you first. Why didn't the House include Medicaid expansion in its final budget?
Medicaid expansion, so everyone understands, is a program for healthy, working adults who meet certain income levels. It's very much unlike existing Medicaid, where you have to be both poor and have some sort of medical condition to qualify. So this is really health care for working healthy adults who could work for an employer that provides this insurance. The state decided a year or so ago that it would participate in the program for 2 years. It ends December 31st, 2016. The governor and her budget said, let's continue this. The House said no. As a result, we didn't have to spend $14.6 million in the last half of our fiscal year 17, and this means we didn't have to make that additional number of budget reductions. This is an issue which the legislature needs to decide, but independent of the budget. There will be legislation introduced in the 2016 session that will deal with this, and we will have this debate at that time. But to do it in the budget, it's such an important issue that that was an inappropriate place to make this major policy decision.
Well, and we had a whole special commission, I think, that met over a summer, a year or two or three ago, and I remember probably talking to the three of you about it at this time. So that's where you feel this should stand now, Representative Kirk, is
correct.
This is a big, big, big policy deal. Let's manage it separately or deal with it separately. What do you think, Representative Wallner?
Well, I think that the governor needed to put it in the budget because she was going to need to show how she was going to fund it for the end of the biennium. We now have 39,000 people who have signed up for Medicaid expansion, and I would differ with Representative Kirk in that calling it for healthy people. I don't think that's a requirement that you have to be healthy. You do have to be uninsured and not have insurance available. And so, 39,000 people have already signed up in New Hampshire. I've met a number of people who have not had insurance and were unable to have insurance through their work. And this has made a huge difference in their lives. Some of them did have health issues that they were not tending to, which were going to be more costly for us in the future than to provide health insurance for them at this point. I think that it's been also for the state. There is definitely going to be cost savings in the future. We've had uncompensated care in hospitals has been high. Hospitals are already telling us that they're seeing a lot less uncompensated care in the emergency rooms. And as more and more people have insurance, they will be covered, and the state won't be responsible for picking that up.
Go ahead, Representative Kirk, and then I have one last question for all of you.
One of the issues that we need to decide is to how to fund this, because although it will only cost us only $14 million to start, in 6 or 7 years it's going to be a $40-plus million a year expenditure.
As the federal share drops down?
As the federal share drops down, the state shares will be over $40 million, and that's going to require an additional revenue source to pay for. We cannot do that within our current budget, and that's one of the issues that we have to address. Is it a good idea for the state to do this, and how will the state pay for it?
Okay, so House lawmakers, here's your chance if there are any state senators listening. Mary Jane Wallner, real quick, what's the one thing you would really hope that the Senate does with this budget? We've talked about a lot of pieces that are really important to you, but...
Well, I hope that the Senate will take a look at it and not keep itself restrained by trying to live within... the revenue that we have at this point. I think that I hope that the Senate will take a bigger look at it and take a look at some of the things that the governor had in her budget suggested to raise a little bit of revenue.
Okay. Neil Kirk.
That sounded like a tax and spend Democrat to me, and I hope that the Senate doesn't do that kind of a thing. I think that the biggest thing they need to address is the rainy day fund, because I think that was a last desperate effort by the House to make sure its budget was balanced. But aside from that, I think living within our means is what the Senate will do, and I think that's what the people of New Hampshire expect from their legislature.
And Steve Norton, will the Senate really start from a clean slate?
I don't think so. My hope is that they begin to set the stage for the type of conversation that Representative Kirk has raised, and that is, what's a forward-looking dialogue mean from a budgetary perspective? If we can't do it in this biennium, what about next biennium?
Okay. Well, thank you all very much for coming in. Very interesting. Thanks for your time. This is The Exchange on NHPR.